This is Mike Dot with the Relax Back UK show on UK Health Radio, your global real feel-good radio station. On the Relax Back UK show, we explore all kinds of health topics, so keep listening and enjoy the ride.
Hi, and thanks for joining me, Mike Dilk, on this week's Relax Back UK show. We start off today with something very, very high tech, but this is not science fiction. This is happening now.
Instead of doing the transplants or changing the replacing the joints, we want to regenerate them.
Fascinating stuff from Dr. Zbigniew, anaesthetist and pain expert, about regenerating our failing body parts with stem cells. Then a reminder of a really fantastic resource.
Pharmacies are able to offer a real vital service to their local communities before you even need to get to the doctor. So please do pop in, speak to your pharmacist, see what they can offer you. And if you do need to be referred to the doctors, the pharmacist would be absolutely the critical place to be able to let you know that.
Reshma Maldi tells us of all the things that pharmacies and pharmacists can do for us. So please do stay with me for a great show. Thank you.
The station that makes you feel good.
How good are vitamin C supplements? Usually only a small proportion of vitamin C actually reaches your cells and has a positive effect. Whereas the high absorption levels of Goldman Laboratories' liposomal vitamin C help maintain optimal vitamin C levels in your body and strengthen your immune system. Now get 10% off when you choose Goldman Laboratories' liposomal vitamin C capsules. Just quote 10 off at goldmanlaboratories.com.
Do you suffer from pain? B-Cure Laser, a home-use CE-approved medical device for the effective treatment of pain, is now available in the UK. The results of a double-blind trial has shown that B-Cure Laser offers a significant reduction in pain compared to the placebo group. To get your special B-Cure offer now, call free on 0808 501 5122 or Google Radio Pro London. B-Cure Laser. B-Cure Laser.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Dr. Zbigniew is the clinical lead for pain at Shrewsbury and Telford Hospital, and he's also an expert in stem cell therapy. So I started off by asking him, are more of us in pain now?
Mike, I'm really upset to say that yes, we are in pain. We did a survey probably about 2 months ago. We wanted to find out how many people really is in pain. Is it a real problem? And to me, the figures are staggering. It's almost 30% of population of people in the UK do suffer some sort of spine, back or joint pain at least half of their time. And which is even more upsetting is that one in four people claim that the pain basically affects their mental well-being. And I think this is really, really worrying outcome. And also
one in four, that's an enormous number of people.
Yes, that's correct. And also one in 10 says that they don't know how long they will be able to cope with this pain. So it's really sort of very, very upsetting picture.
Is there any data on whether this is kind of affecting older people that you might expect to be suffering from aches and pains, or, you know, what's the age range on this?
The age range, well, probably, you know, we all suspected that it would mainly affect the elderly people, but to our surprise, in our survey, 53% of responders were basically in a group around 20-year-olds. So it does affect young people, and I think it is an increasing problem.
Goodness me. No, I was always of the opinion, and sort of this is from my survey, which is not very scientific, sort of talking to family and friends.
Yes.
I always thought that, like, joint surgery on the NHS was, you know, one of the big successes. My mum had two new hips, and it really did give her a new lease of life. You know, aren't we just good at this stuff? Surely it's not a problem, because you hear of people having wonderful knee surgery, etc., and their life has changed and life is great.
I have no doubts that the surgery can be life-changing. I deeply respect my orthopedic colleagues. I used to work a lot with them as an anesthetist, and I think in overall they do absolutely great job. But I also think that patient should always have a chance to make a choice, because the problem which I see with surgery is that once it's done, it cannot be undone. So
Right. It's
basically, for me, as I try to explain it to my patients, it's a one-way road, okay? It can be very nice and, you know, very smooth road, but nonetheless, it's a one-way road. You can't stop, say, oh, no, actually, you know what? Let's go back. I don't want it. And success rate is high in hip replacement and knee replacement. But again, nonetheless, there are people who were less fortunate and they ended up with some complications after surgery.
Right.
Besides, there are patients who are ill, who have a lot of comorbidities, and simply they are not fit for surgery, and or the surgery poses a considerable threat to their health and life. So Sure. It's all very complicated. And as I said, I've nothing wrong with the surgery, nothing against the surgery. I don't want to be my orthopedic colleagues to become suddenly jobless. Absolutely not. But it has to be one of the choices, not the only choice patients have.
Well, I mean, there are an awful lot of other choices that you come across, aren't there? I made a list off the top of my head. If you're kind of, you know, you go see a chiropractor or an osteopath or a physio, acupuncture, massage, CBD oil, turmeric. There's all kinds of stuff.
Absolutely.
Do you point your patients to any of these?
Yes, very often. First of all, I think when we look at the variety of treatments, we should look at them as a spectrum. So on one side of the spectrum, the final one is the surgery. And in the very beginning will be this kind of, let's call it the soft treatments, like as you mentioned, osteopath, chiropractor, physiotherapy, acupuncture, and all many other very good and very effective treatments. The other side of it is supplements. You've mentioned turmeric. I think it works really great. Vitamin D, which most of the population in the north part of the planet has got a deficiency.
Lack of sunlight, you're talking there, I think.
Yes, exactly. And somewhere in the middle, we have, again, the very broad spectrum of what we call the interventional pain management. And within this world, we have sort of what I call the traditional pain management, which includes steroid injections, nerve ablations, that kind of treatments.
Those are invasive, are they?
They are. Well, it is all of them are kind of an injection therapy. So so they are obviously much more invasive than physiotherapy, but far less invasive than surgery.
Yes,
so they are still within the group of non-invasive treatments. However, it is the interventional pain management. So it is an intervention. The problem is that this part, which I call the traditional pain management, interventional pain management, is focused mainly on stopping the painful transmission. Okay, mm-hmm. So patient stops feeling pain, but these methods do not address the bottom of the issue. So they
the
don't
cause, yeah, they don't fix the cause.
The roots, yes, of the problem. And right. This is where the regenerative medicine comes in. This is what I have found so exciting in regenerative medicine. And I always like to quote the father of medicine, Hippocrates, who thousands of years ago, he said that the real healing forces are actually within our bodies. So, yes. You know, he presented an extremely extreme ancient wisdom, but obviously he didn't have technology. Now okay. We've got the technology available and we just have to combine those two for the good results. So, yes.
So explain what is the regenerative technology that you're talking about to the layman. I'm a layman as far as this is concerned. So okay. Tell me basically okay. Simply okay. What it's all about.
So regenerative medicine is the medicine that utilizes body's own tissue, own cells, in order to provide regeneration of the function of the structure. So instead of doing the transplants or changing the replacing the joints, we want to regenerate them. Using patient's own stem cells, so the cells which are hidden in bone marrow, or even simple things like platelets, which are part of the circulating blood. So really, it is about using patient's own defense forces and regenerative forces in order to restore the function. And I always like to mention steroid injections, which are incredibly common, but I keep saying that steroid is a mercenary. You just hire the mercenary to fight for you. And why okay. would you do that if you have such a fantastic, incredible, well-equipped, your own army within your body that is ready to fight for you? Why right. would you use mercenaries?
Let me ask you about the army, your own personal army of stem cells.
Yes.
Where do they come from? So you take stem cells from a patient and then
yes.
inject them back where they're required. So where do you get yes. them from? How do you get them out of the patient?
The stem cells, the majority of stem cells live in bone marrow. This is this fluid part of the bone inside, very deep inside the bone. And this is where these stem cells live. And they are released from there to the bloodstream. And their marvelous feature is that they are able to transfer themselves into other cells in the body. So, for yep. example, into the cartilage, into the tendon, into the ligament, etc., etc. There is a lot of stem cells living in the adipose tissue, so in the fat tissue, and in many, many other tissues. There was a fantastic study done by one of the pioneers of regenerative medicine, Dr. Renigou from Paris, orthopedic surgeon. And he measured the number of stem cells in people from the age of 20 to the age of 80. And he noticed a dramatic drop of the number of stem cells in the joints, for example, in the knee. Over the age, but the great news was that actually the number of stem cells within the bone marrow changed very little over age. So okay. Really what we do, we take the cells from where they are to where they are needed. This is, you know, just to put our whole activity in one sentence.
I was going to ask you, if we have these stem cells in our body, how come they don't repair the things we need repairing? It's just that, you know, they get a bit old like us, do they? They age, so they don't work quite so effectively.
Well, the stem cells are still very keen to do the job. The problem is that sometimes there's a problem with getting them to the place. Okay. So for example, the discs in a spine or certain parts of the joint like cartilage and meniscus in the knee, they have very little blood vessels. So really, stem cells they have very little chance to get there in a large numbers, in the numbers enough to provide the successful regeneration.
Okay, so a patient comes into you, you suck out some stem cells from their bone marrow. Which bone?
We take it from the pelvic bone, from the posterior part of it. So patient is lying on their front, on their tummies, and we take it from there. We use either ultrasound or X-ray to guide us properly. Okay. We aspirate the bone marrow and we process it in our laboratory. It mainly, the processing is spinning it in the centrifuge and concentrating it. So basically we take, like, for example, 80 mils of bone marrow, or 100 mils of bone marrow, and then we concentrate it to the point that what we've got for the injection is like 5 mils. So it's 20 times less. So that basically means that we concentrate the stem cells 20 times into the very, very, very potent product.
And does this happen during the same visit? So the patient comes in, lies on his front, and these stem cells are sucked out, spun down, and put back in. Is that all the same visit?
Yes, it's on the same visit. It's first of all, this is how it works, and we have to take into consideration that, you know, once the stem cells are taken away from bone marrow, they start dying. So we have to inject them alive. So we have to be quick. We have to do that as quickly as possible. Okay. So we have a window of 2-2.5 hours between taking the bone marrow out and re-injecting the stem cells into the required area in the body.
Okay.
And within this 2.5 hours, we have enough time to process them in the laboratory. On top of it, there are regulatory issues, and the FDA in the United States and European Union regulations, which we still follow in the UK, even after Brexit, they do not allow to store stem cells, and use them later on. So we have to do that on the same day.
Okay. So in the process of taking them out and putting them back, is there any local anesthetic? Is this, or a general anesthetic? What happens to the patient?
We use local anesthetic, and I have to say we are good in it. Okay. Both me and my partner in the clinic, we are both anesthetists as a background, so we are familiar with local anesthetics, and we spend a really considerable amount of time making sure that all the tissues are anesthetized properly, and patients is fairly comfortable during the procedure.
You're saying it doesn't hurt?
Sorry?
You're saying it doesn't hurt? Well, not much anyway.
Usually, I can only say that usually patients say it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. So for me, I'm not saying that this is pleasant. You know, I don't think, you know, any intervention within the body is not pleasant. It's something unnatural, but really, it's not as bad as it sounds. On some occasions, we use a little bit of sedation to make the patient more comfortable. But generally speaking, we like to talk to patients during the procedures. We want them to be involved in the conversation with us, and so the usual management is simply local anesthetic.
Okay, let me ask a question that probably stems from my lack of knowledge. If you're injecting, say, stem cells into a knee to make the cartilage grow.
Yes.
What can it make the cartilage, you know, grow in the wrong place or too much, or, you know, because things growing where they shouldn't in the human body is generally a bit of a bad thing, and it makes me think of cancer. So can things get out of hand?
This is a very good question, and thank you very much for asking it. I will start from the end. You mentioned cancer, and again I will quote Philippe Hernigou, this French orthopedic surgeon. He did a study in the mid 90s, where he took two groups of people, of 2,000 people in each group, And one group did have a stem cell treatment, the other didn't. And he followed them up for up to 15 years. And the conclusion is that the incidence of cancer in the group that get the stem cells treatment was no different to the incidence of cancer in the other group. So the conclusion, logical conclusion, is there is no risk of spreading or developing cancer from injecting stem cells.
Okay, that's good news.
It is a fantastic news, and I think that this study was basically it opened the the gate. It opened the whole research and clinical applications of regenerative orthopedics. Obviously, using stem cells in other applications away from orthopedics can be different, can have different issues. That's not my area of expertise.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that, actually, because if it can make bits of your body grow, I was going to say, what about a new liver, a new kidney? What about treating people who have dementia? Is there any bounds to the potential of this treatment?
There is a potential. There is definitely the potential. There is still research going on. If you look at the statistics from the American website registering research, there is probably over 200 different researches going on stem cells across the world as we speak. Okay. So essentially every month we learn something new. And obviously the applications you can think could be potentially endless. Obviously it needs a lot of research, a lot of investigation and so on. Orthopedics so far has been researched very robustly. We've got a really good and solid evidence that it works, both stem cells and platelet-rich plasma, and it's not posing any particular risks to patients. So yes, we can consider it as a safe and an effective treatment in many cases. I'm not saying that it works for 100% of patients. Nothing does, but I think it's still very exciting and plausible option for patients.
Well, one thing that I was thinking is, if this really does work so well, it could be a lot more effective than an operation, and actually a lot cheaper than an operation. So the NHS could save a lot of money. Is this available on the NHS?
It is available on NHS only as a part of research. So NHS at the moment does not offer this treatment, as far as I know, as a standard care. But I'm very glad that you've mentioned the cost, because really recently, we are talking probably about January, there was a study done by Regenex. Regenex is a network of regenerative orthopedic clinics. And university in Utrecht in Netherlands. And what they've done, this QALY. This is the QALY analyze. So they analyze the quality of life adjustment additional year, I think this is. It's quite complicated. And nonetheless, they compared the stem cell treatment for knee arthritis with total knee replacement. Mm-hmm. And it showed very clearly the financial benefits of using stem cells versus the total knee replacement. It's simply cheaper in 5 years run and in 10 years times run. So it's definitely something which is convincing. And I think that this study, this report, is particularly important because it speaks the language of the healthcare management, sure, because they need to look at the costs, and here the cost benefit seems to be absolutely obvious.
Okay, well, that's very interesting, because not only if the treatment is cheaper, it also means that you get this person out and about being a productive member of society as well.
Exactly.
Paying taxes, all that kind of stuff. So,
yes,
potentially a win-win.
Exactly. Exactly.
Let me ask you a question. We've covered lots of ground, but we haven't covered any potential drawbacks. Is there anything that could be a drawback? It all sounds wonderful. Is there any potential concerns?
I think at the moment the main concern is using the both stem cells and platelet-rich plasma appropriately. So there is definitely an issue, still the issue with the provider's training. There is an issue with kind of clinical governance in these areas.
Right. And you're talking ethics here.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's this area is not regulated, and we as a I hope credible providers, we are asking actually for very robust and tight regulations, because we don't want the rotten apples to ruin the, you know, the reputation of really credible treatments, what we believe. Sure. And so definitely the whole area, the whole speciality or subspeciality requires a very good regulations, training schemes, credibility, and that sort of thing. So that would be one of the things that needs attention. For patients, I think the drawbacks are probably, well, okay, one of them would be that, you know, these treatments do not work indefinitely. If you want to avoid surgery in the future, you probably would need this treatment repeated every now and then, every 5 years, every 7 years. That's again something what people sometimes say, okay, if I go for surgery, it will be done and I can forget it.
Well, the surgery does wear out, actually, doesn't it?
If you get a new knee joint, but I'm not sure, you know, that many patients are actually aware of it. So that would be the drawback. But there is no risk, you know, of overdose, because we are not using any medicine here. There are no risk of severe allergic reaction, because we are using patient's own tissue. So I think I would say risks for patients are coming from the procedure as such, like, you know, every procedure, every injection, every intervention brings some risks. But compared to surgery, I think they are minor.
Fine. All right. So should we all be, when we have children, saving the placenta and the stem cells from the placenta? I've heard of that happening. Is that going to be happening a lot more in the future, do you think?
This is a kind of a gray area at the moment, because the question is whether if you preserve the placenta blood and you keep it for, let's say, 20, 30 years, will you actually get any alive stem cells from there after 30 years? And I don't know the answer to this question. So I think probably I would say no, not at this stage, at least not for orthopedic conditions. But the future is, you know, will show which way we should go. As I said, every month we learn something new. So what I'm saying now might be not true in a month's time.
Sure, no, I get it. But this whole field is absolutely fascinating, I can't help thinking, and this is going to help a lot of people. But if yes, people are listening and thinking, yeah, I'd like to find out a bit more, or even, you know, their knee's hurting and they want to see if they can get some help. What is a good resource for them to have a look at?
I would very strongly advise to go to Regenex website and join Dr. Chris Centeno's blog. Dr. Chris Centeno is the pioneer of regenerative orthopedics in the United States. He started it probably 17 years ago. He set up Regenex. It started from simply one clinic in Colorado and then sort of mushroomed all over the country and now all over the world. He is very, very prolific blogger. He blogs about the conditions. He blogs about the applications. He blogs about the future. He's also very active on Facebook, where there are live interviews with him and so on. So I would really, really strongly recommend people to reach out to him and look at his blog. On our website, on our clinic's website, the AlgoCells, we've got also some resources. There is a booklet sort of presenting the treatments. Also, there are Dr. Centeno's books, which can be downloaded as a PDF for free. So yes, there are plenty of resources where people can go and find out more, and they can contact me directly as well.
Okay, if they want to contact you directly, is it okay to how would you like them to do that?
It's probably the best thing is to email the clinic, which is the clinic at algocells.com, and our patient care coordinator will pick it up and she will respond. And she will pass all the information and questions and queries to me.
Absolutely fascinating. Thank you so much
Thank you very much.
I think a lot of people are going to find that very interesting.
Thank you very much, Mike. And thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to talk to you. Great talk.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Galar Light is the quantum energy emitted from the universe, from the sun and stars. Now, Tom Palladino, a humanitarian and Scalar Light researcher, has created the world's only Scalar Light healing system, a system that can bring long-distance healing and wellness to humans, pets, and plants via a photograph. Get your free 15-day trial now at scalarlight.com. Or click on the Scalar Light banner on the UK Health Radio website.
Shields like masks are top of mind right now. But did you know you have inner armor working constantly to protect you from pathogens? It keeps you healthy and thriving. It's your immune system. Ion Gut triggers the body's natural ability to support gut strength all year long, so your immune system can protect you when you need it the most. How are you treating your inner armor? Visit uk.ionbiome.com to learn more. Ion Gut. Protect what protects you.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
My next guest is Reshma Melde. She works at quite a famous pharmacy in London. So I started by asking her where that is.
I work at John Bell and Croydon Pharmacy, just on Wigmore Street in central London.
Okay, and I've got a feeling there's been a pharmacy there forever, practically.
Probably forever in terms of my lifespan, absolutely. John Bell and Croydon has been established now for over 200 years. So it's a well-known name for its local community.
Right. So first off, here's a question. You can put me right here. When I was a kid, my mum would say, right, I need to go to the chemist. She never called it the pharmacy. What's the difference?
Actually, it's probably both very similar, the same. It's a destination where a lot of our communities would have gone into a chemist at the time to have had their conditions assessed by someone. And then being recommended an appropriate product. And at the time, that many years ago, pharmacists would make up their own medicines and concoctions in the pharmacy itself. Whereas now, many of these products are pre-made for us through manufacturers, and they're available on the shelves for you to pick up. And if you need further advice, there is a pharmacist and their pharmacy teams available to be able to answer any of those critical questions that you may have.
Right. Okay. But a pharmacist does a lot more than just sort of give someone a packet of pills, and a lot more than a pill counter and a pill packager, aren't they? What do you need to do to become a qualified pharmacist, and how long does it take?
So to be a pharmacist is actually quite a big responsibility, and you're quite right. It's not just counting pills and handing out medications. And pharmacy over the years has very much evolved and changed to be an integral part of our communities. So many pharmacists now have to study at least 4 years at university, another year in training in a pharmacy alongside another pharmacist, and then sit a whole host of registration exams before they can be certified and registered to practice as a pharmacist.
Right.
Pharmacy has changed in terms of, we've probably just seen in the last 12 months, our NHS has become so under pressure, both GPs and hospitals, and many pharmacists have had to look at how can they better support the communities. So in terms of further training to be able to offer specialist consultations is where many pharmacies are now moving into to help fill that gap that's currently there because of the pandemic.
Right. And I mean, let's face it, pharmacists are a big resource, I think. I did a bit of research before our chat, actually, to see if I could find out just how many pharmacists there are in the UK. Do you know how many qualified pharmacists there are in the UK?
Oh, gosh. I'm going to take a guess. There must be hundreds and thousands of them, because if you think about it, across the country, you will have at least 3 or 4 local community pharmacies around in your area and with a different setting. So it's not just now on your high street. You will find pharmacies with certain surgeries as part of health centres. So pharmacy has adapted the way it reaches out to its community in lots of different ways. Yeah. But actually, you can now see pharmacists as a part of your surgery practice. So there are many more pharmacists now, not just in hospitals or retail. They are now training to be able to be part of your surgery practice.
Sure. Well, actually, my little bit of research, I found a partial answer. A few years ago, I can't remember the exact date, but in England, there were 42,000 pharmacists. And yeah, you're right. You know, there's one on every high street. So they're everywhere. So they're a big resource that it seems like it would be very sensible to use. And the thing I love about them is you can just kind of breeze in to see a pharmacist. You don't have to make an appointment, do you?
Oh, that's the beautiful part of it, is we are so accessible. We're open generally far longer hours. Many pharmacies are open sort of 9 in the morning till quite late in the evening. We've traditionally had pharmacies that are open 24 hours. So in terms of access to a pharmacist has traditionally been very much more easier than possibly trying to get an appointment at the doctor's. So in terms of making the pharmacy to be a first port of call has been there and available to many of our communities. And what we're seeing now over the last 12 months is many more people turning to a pharmacist or a pharmacy first to understand what can they do about the health concerns they have. And as pharmacists, we're better able to direct them around what solutions are available.
Sure. And also my experience actually is if you want to do that, there's hardly ever a queue. What's it like in your pharmacy in London?
Oh, I don't know if we can quite say there's hardly ever a queue. I think it just depends. It's like a bit like a bus stop. It depends, right. You know, the time of day that you may walk in. But generally, it's not just the pharmacist. The pharmacy is made up of the pharmacist and its support team around the pharmacist as well. So very often you have got trained healthcare assistants and dispensers who are also able to help you with your concerns and where need be are referred to the pharmacist for more specialist advice should they need that.
Sure. And the other thing to mention is that this advice is actually free, isn't it? You know.
Yes, absolutely. So your advice with pharmacists is absolutely free of charge. There are other services that pharmacists can guide you into should you need a little bit more help and support. So, for example, you may have been suffering from a particular health ailment. You may have already tried over-the-counter medications, which may not have been quite enough. What pharmacists are now able to do in some pharmacies are to offer a one-to-one personal consultation. With the pandemic, it's actually moved forward from just not being face-to-face, but actually could be virtual as well. The patient is then assessed to see whether they are applicable to be able to have a selected prescription medication that may be more effective for the symptoms that they are suffering at this point in time. But equally, if the symptoms are such that needs to be referred back to the GP, there are mechanisms that pharmacists can then action to refer you back to your GP for further help.
Sure. Let me just ask a question about something you said there. So a pharmacist can suggest drugs, over-the-counter drugs, but in some instances they can prescribe as well, can they?
Yes. So in the first instance, you've got certain services called patient group directives, which a pharmacist is able to assess a patient for a particular prescription medication that they would be able to supply. It is a chargeable service. But equally, there are many pharmacists now progressing their careers onto becoming prescribers, which then allows them to be able to assess a patient and within their guidelines that they feel comfortable they can prescribe, are able to prescribe prescription medications as well.
Okay. All right. Now, this, actually, the answer to this might be bound up with that somewhat. When I go into a pharmacy, quite often there's a side room. Now, I've never been in the side room, and there's like a sign on it saying, if you want to talk to your pharmacist in private or whatever, the facilities are available for that. What happens in the side room?
So your side room is actually called a consultation room. It's a place where all pharmacists will have available. Should there be a customer who needs a little bit more privacy or may need to have a more one-to-one discreet conversation, you can have access to this room where the pharmacist and yourself can sit down and be able to have a more comfortable conversation without being around other customers.
Sure. No, I get it. And in fact, is the consultation room sometimes used for vaccinations? Because actually, last time we spoke, we were talking about vaccinations as far as COVID was concerned.
Absolutely. So the consultation room is used for many purposes. It's obviously, as I said, a discreet room where you can have a one-to-one conversation. There are also many services that pharmacists and the teams will conduct through this consultation room, from could be vaccinations to screening, such as blood pressure measurements, diabetes measurements, depending on what services that particular pharmacy is actually offering.
Right. Okay. Let's just talk about the vaccinations a little bit more. Can you get a COVID vaccination at most pharmacies at the minute? What's the situation?
I wouldn't say most pharmacies. There are many pharmacies in London that have now opted in to be able to offer COVID vaccinations. So please do have a look at your local NHS website or even pop into your local pharmacy, who'll be able to guide you, if they are not doing COVID vaccinations, where your nearest pharmacy vaccination centre is. And so, yes, those pharmacies are offering first dose vaccinations, second dose and boosters for anyone who still has not got themselves vaccinated.
Okay. And while you're at it, how about the flu?
The flu vaccinations have started probably about October, November of last year. You are still applicable to have a flu vaccination should you wish to have one. So please do pop into your pharmacy and do pick up a flu vaccination.
Excellent. All right. So, I mean, all this does sound like the pharmacists can help GPs a lot, or, you know, help a lot of the patients that would go to GPs to kind of take the load off a bit.
I think that's where the last 12 months have been very critical, because many GPs have had to really consolidate their services to quite severe cases coming through. So that's meant pharmacists have needed to find a way to fill that gap, which, as you quite rightly said, traditionally patients would probably think, I need to go to the doctors. By speaking to people like you and reaching out to many, many more people to understand that pharmacists are able to offer a real vital service to their local communities before you even need to get to the doctor. So please do pop in, speak to your pharmacists, see what they can offer you. And if you do need to be referred to the doctors, the pharmacist would be absolutely the critical place to be able to let you know that.
Okay. So just over the last, well, year and a half, probably getting on for 2 years now, do you find that quite a few customers sort of come to you first rather than the GP first?
I've seen it. Yeah, absolutely. There's been a great change in how communities have seen pharmacists. We've been open right the way through the pandemic. And actually, more often than not, recently, I have seen more and more people come into the pharmacy to ask us, what should I do at this point in time? Which is actually really great, because we've been trying to encourage pharmacists to be the first port of call for so many years. It's unfortunate it's taken a pandemic to highlight this to our communities, but it's so refreshing and encouraging to know that our services are being recognised, our customers are seeing the benefits of having your pharmacist around the corner to where you may be. And actually, as pharmacists, now being able to offer more and more services so that we can help support GPs with a lot of those ailments.
Sure. Do you think part of this is that in general, the great public is becoming a bit more proactive in looking after themselves?
I absolutely think that's one of the biggest steps of change over the last 12 months. We have all needed to take responsibility for ourselves, our physical health, our mental well-being, and actually having that lifelong commitment of self-care has become a big part for all of us. The pandemic has really shown the importance of some of the small changes that we can make to offer some big health benefits thereafter.
This is a bit of a silver lining in a really awful time, I suppose.
It's unfortunate it does take something like this to bring it out, but we are there, we're getting there, and I'm seeing more and more customers coming out, reaching out for information of what more can I do for myself, which is really refreshing.
Yeah. Yes, that is refreshing. I like that. Something you just mentioned briefly a bit earlier about going digital. Now, there's been quite a bit in the media about doctors going digital and having digital appointments, that sort of thing. Are pharmacists getting on board with this kind of technology as well?
Absolutely. If you think about it, given almost now, as you quite rightly said, almost 2 years ago, there are many people that were having to shield because they were quite vulnerable and couldn't get out to our local communities. So they needed a way to be able to be tapped into for their healthcare needs. So just as much as GPs have turned to virtual consultations, pharmacists have looked at exactly the same as how can we reach out to our customers who can't get to us. So many services are now being looked at of how can we deliver them virtually if we can't do them face-to-face.
So how does that work? Because if you go into a pharmacy, you can talk to a pharmacist face-to-face for free. If you do it digitally, does that have a cost?
No, if it is a general question that you may have, obviously we've always traditionally had the telephone that you could contact the pharmacist on.
Sure.
Technology has taken us a step forward, so we can do a virtual video call. It's also free services. Yes, where there may be some specific services you may have tapped into, they may be chargeable. But we want to try and make pharmacists and pharmacy accessible to as many people as possible in whichever better way suits you.
Okay, I mean, that sounds really like the way ahead to me, because more and more people are happy using these kind of technical ways to talk to all sorts of different people, medical people, doctors, pharmacists, nurses included. So I'm sure that will become more and more popular.
Absolutely. And you know what? We've got to move with the times. Technology is bringing us forward. We need to go with it.
Yeah, okay. As a way of finishing, you've mentioned some of them already, but what kind of things can you help with that people might want doing tests, what have you, but they can't go to the GP or the GP is busy? You mentioned a few of them. Can you just mention those again?
Yes. So, for example, at John Bell in Croydon, we will be launching a new service, which is linked with the patient group directive. So as I mentioned earlier, where you may have had over-the-counter medications that hasn't quite worked or not quite delivered what you expected, our pharmacists will be able to go through that one-to-one consultation with you for some specific ailments ranging from throat infections, urine infections, from acne, eczema to dermatitis, including allergy. So there is a whole range of medical ailments that our pharmacists will be able to see if there is possibly a prescription medication that can be offered as a solution. Equally, we have also buddied up with our local healthcare professionals so that we can offer more screening services and blood testing services, which will be a service that could be joined in with some of these consultations that pharmacists will be doing.
Excellent. All right. So there you go. For all listeners, it's a really good comprehensive service that can be provided by, pharmacists in general. But just before we finish, Rashma, do give the details for the pharmacy that you are part of, you work with in London.
So I'm a superintendent pharmacist at John Bell and Croydon. In central London. We're on Wigmore Street, just on the corner of Marylebone and Wigmore Street.
Okay, and do you have a website if people want to see the sort of things you can get up to and help them with again?
Absolutely. Please log on to www.johnbellcroydon.co.uk. Our website has lots of information around the services and products that we offer. And if you are walking past, do pop in and come and speak to us.
Rashma, thank you very much indeed for coming on and chatting about how pharmacists can help us all.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you for having me on today. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much to my guests for this week's show. And they were Dr. Sabigniew talking about pain and stem cell therapy, and also the pharmacist Rashma Melde. And of course, thank you to you for listening.
That was the Relaxed Back UK show with me, Mike Dill. Thank you for listening, and please do join us again next time.